Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under The Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course. To the Carpcast, introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chops. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie. Ooh,
yeah. So hello and welcome to episode 53 of the Carpcast. How are we doing, Mark?
We're doing fine. You know, I've never had a 53. I'm feeling inadequate now. I need to get a kipper.
We won't mention fish that have been 53 because, as you'll hear shortly, Kevin Nash took the piss out of me for mentioning Mr. Angry. They had a sweepstake in the office that whether I would mention it in each show. I apparently did, so I'm pretty sure the lady is exactly the same.
You've mentioned it in this one already, so someone's won.
Yeah, somebody's won. I did get Mr. Nash back quite immediately, so you'll hear that. But anyway, what's going down? Now we're over half century old.
Yeah, in Carpcast terms, not actual age, thankfully.
Still got a lot.
We're not far off, the pair of us, although you'll be there before me.
And the rate we've been putting Carpcast out the last few weeks will probably hit 53 maybe we'll hit episode 60 before. I'll be 60 before episode 60. I don't know. But so, yeah, you've been fishing?
I have. And tied in with the little lack of Carpcast is the complete lack of time to actually do them. Same with the fishing, and actually managed one day session last week, which when you've paid a princely sum for a syndicate, you want to get the most of it. And yeah, I did a 164-mile round trip for a day session, I've actually done 200-mile round trips just to bait up now, so it's a few hours out of your day, but when you want a big fish, you've got to fish where they live, end of story. And I'm glad I did it. You know, because when you're on a day session, it's just a totally different dynamic to a session. You're a lot more mobile and a lot more alert. And when you're arriving at a lake 4:30 in the morning, you know, you're doing a lap. Everyone else is, well, there's only one other fella on, to be fair. But, you know, he was sock on. You know, you have a quick look round, see if there's any wet mats evidence. And, you know, there wasn't. And I stood in one corner and then just heard a splash round the corner. So I had a look. And as I'm stood there, another one stuck its head out. then another, and they were going mad for about 30 minutes, and then nothing. So, I wouldn't have seen that if I wasn't there that early, or even if I'd have woke up that early, but, I got in there, got in the swim, and it got light, and the lake was pea soup.
I saw pictures of it, yeah, it looked very algae-ridden.
Yeah, I was looking for the day session, because it's usually gin clear. You know, some deep, lovely deep margins there. You know, you can see all the clear spots. And, I was hoping for a bit of stalking action. But when you can't even, you know, see more than a foot down. I've seen worse algae blooms, to be fair. But it spoilt me fun a bit. But I did catch one. Totally out of the blue. I'm not going to give too much away because I've done an in-session which we'll be putting out on the extra, which we will be getting out very, very soon, hopefully. Just a few more bits and bobs to tie up. And it was just about 1:30 in the afternoon. I'd almost written it off. Not many, but there was one or two fish on the surface. I'd recast that rod after a swan had wiped it out. It landed with a bump, but, you know, like going round the weed, not mega tight up to the island that was in front of me. I'm guessing 12 to 14 foot, and that's the rod that rattled off. So I was well chuffed, just over 29. And I broadcast myself on Facebook Live in my pants.
I saw it, yeah. Boxer shorts and tattoos.
Yeah, it was all, I remember. It was all hanging, well, it wasn't all hanging out, but yes, it was there. The wife told me off. She says she's ashamed of me.
Well, at least you caught a fish. Nice to catch one on a day session like that. It makes it worthwhile. I remember
driving, makes the drive home a lot easier.
I remember driving to Pit 2, which is 200 miles from my house. I drove there to do an overnighter purely for the purpose of putting some bait in. I thought I might as well, because I couldn't fish that week. I'd normally do 3 nights if I was travelling that far. And I knew I couldn't fish a proper session that week, but I didn't want to not put some bait in. So I did an overnighter, just for the sake of it, just so I wasn't driving straight there and driving back, really. And ended up having 2 bites. I lost them both, but I learned something, you know. I think that might have been my first ever 2 bites out of the lake as well.
In the Terminator swim?
In the Terminator, yeah, although I did lose them, but it was an overnighter purely to put some bait in.
Yeah, like we just said before we started recording, my brain is full of ridiculously useless carp fishing trivia.
Yes, you remember the peg that I did that overnight in 12 years ago. 13 years ago, it's probably more.
Yeah, if my wife asked me to walk to the shop, I'm going to get there 100 yards and forget what I went for. But, yeah, have you done any fishing, or have you just been on your tour of festivals?
Yeah, well, I got back from the Europe trip. I was back a couple of days and we recorded the last podcast, and I went on the final leg of my summer missions, which was Camp Bestival down in Dorset, right on the south coast. Travelling, fishing, doing 3,000 miles plus over the period of 3 weeks with an extremely heavily laden van took its toll, because I had a blowout on the back where I changed
I saw the pictures of that. That looked mad.
Yeah, I changed the 2 front tyres before I went because they were getting a bit bald. Well, very bald, in fact. They were definitely 3-pointers. But the back ones are still legal, but you can see they have worn on the outsides. And it blew out on the back one, so fortunately there was no crash or anything. But it did strand us in the... well, as it turns out, I was 10 minutes from one Carpcast listener's house who saw the post, Facebook post that I put afterwards with a picture of the wheel exploded up. He was like, oh, I could have come and helped her out. And I live 10 minutes away. And it's actually 10 minutes from Rob Hughes' house as well, I believe.
Really?
Who also offered help. But I already had the RAC on the way and stuff at the time.
That's nice of people to offer.
Yeah, it's very good. Nice, one of the nice sides of social media. £200 and something lighter for a new tyre and an out of hours call out, and yeah, I was on my way. I got there a bit late. Had a nice festival. It is a fantastic festival, Camp Bestival. If you've got kids, it's really geared up towards kids. Although there, you know, some good acts on as well. But yeah, it was a really good weekend. But that's me finished on my kind of. Life stuff. We're full steam ahead with the Carpcast now. I've really got a fishing bug. I can't wait to go fishing again. And the next time I'm going to be fishing is the Nash Royston Social. By the time you hear this, it will definitely be sold out. We had a couple of the American chaps that were going to come over can't, unfortunately. So we had a couple of spaces come up on it. We put a message out on Facebook yesterday, and I think there's 3 people at the minute that are all possibles, and there's another 2 that messaged yesterday that haven't replied since, but did seem quite keen. So it's probably sold out by the time you hear this, but it's going to be my next fishing trip, and I cannot wait. I just can't wait to get there.
Looking forward to it after that video that they put up on the Nash page.
Yeah, there's a lot of fish in there. There's about a couple hundred fish in each lake, Kevin reckons, including the originals and what they've stocked. And then he's going to adjust as necessary, you know, once they really, because they don't really know how many originals were in there. They've seen, you know, he saw a group of 50 in the Long Lake Kingfisher, is it? Saw a group of 50 on a hot day at some point in there. So we presume the stock to be about 100, because obviously you never see all the fish. So I think they've probably put another 100 in. He said he's, from what they guessed was already in there, they've adjusted the stock to a couple of hundred, which is a lot of fish. Bear in mind that those lakes are, what, about 3-4 acres each? That's quite a few fish in a lake that size. But it sounds super interesting. The wood lake, the round one, sounds really, really interesting. Just bars and deep water and shelves and plateaus and all sorts. Sounds good for you know, some of the coaching that we'll be giving. I think I'll use my expertise of feature finding and maybe it sounds like a good lake to do that. Alan Blair's going to be there. The Long Lake sounds ideal for stalking. Deep margins, a very long lake, and a very flat bottom, but quite a steep margin. So it sounds to me perfect for stalking that lake down the edge. So probably put Alan Blair on there on the Saturday, giving a bit of stalking Jewish coaching. If you do want to get involved in the Carpcast social at any point, get on our website, carpcast.com. There's room on the Oxford one,
Christchurch.
Yeah, we haven't started pushing that one yet, but we will be doing. Frank Warwick will be the name angler that is going to be helping us out on that weekend. But yeah, on this trip, Richard, firedupbarbecues.co.uk, they're going, is it firedup-barbecues or fired-up? I should know this off the top of my head.
I think it's just Fired Up Barbecues.
Ah, okay. Rich is going to be doing
the barbecue. We'll put a link in the description anyway.
Yeah. He does one of the finest barbecues I've ever seen. And he's fully mobile, can do it outdoors, on your fishing lake, at a wedding. He does it all sorts of outside catering. So check him out. But he's going to be doing the food. And I'm really looking forward to it. And I think there's a bit of excitement about Royston, mainly because it hasn't been open yet. But if you do want to fish there after our weekend, then you can do so. You can go to the Nash Lakes website, which is nashlakes.co.uk. I think I'll just get that up to double check it. But yeah, you can also book for the church in the Cops Lake on there as well. And you can book for the new Royston Lakes. I think it's about... is it £25 for 24 hours, 9 till 9? You do have to, a bit like how Eric's Willows runs its thing, you have to join a membership. You have to be on the list to be able to buy a day ticket, basically. But it's only £25 for 5 years. So it's a token gesture, just so they've got a record of who has an account and stuff. www.nashlakes.com is the website. So go and check out all the Nash Lakes.
Oh, shall we talk about our chums from DNA?
Yes, dnabaits.com is another website where you can go and get some fantastic baits. Friend of the Carpcast and friend of ours, Jason Walker, posted a picture up of the S7 the other day that had just been in the margins of his lake. Did you see that picture at all?
I didn't see that, no, but I'm going to guess it was covered in snails or something.
It wasn't just covered in snails, you couldn't see the boilie. It looked like somebody had glued... remember the Christen bogey? That was supposed to be a way to, like, fish hemp on a hair and stuff. It was like a sticky... It looked like somebody had done that, just stuck nails... Yeah, snails. Nails wouldn't be very carp-friendly, would it?
No.
Stuck nails. Snails all around it. You could not see an inch of it. I would like to have seen two or three other boilies in side by side and see if the snails did that to all of them. Because I've had that with many baits over the years. You've dropped one in the edge on a very rich lake and all the natural food likes it. But if that's happening out on the bottom, then wow, what attraction has that got to be? Like a crunchy snail boilie. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, but yeah,
that can't beat snails, so.
But I know Jason and the gang, they absolutely love that S7, which is the Secret 7, just one of the many quality baits that DNA do. You can get a discount on all their stuff using the offer code CARPCAST5 when you check out. It gives you an extra 5% discount on all their stuff. They do fluoro pop-ups, post-free deals sent direct to your door, fluoro candy sticks, fluoro wafter post-free deals. I believe they removed the Zig pack now. But they do like 5 kilo deals of all of their flavours of boilies, including the new switch that everybody raves about. It's a 5 kilo boilie and a pot of hook baits is £45 delivered direct to your door. Or you can have deal two, which is a pot of hook baits and a litre of your choice of liquid, as well as your choice of boilies. They do 10 kilo mixes, even 50 kilo mixes, which is 50 kilos of freezer bait. You can split it into two different sizes. You get a pot of matching cork dust wafters, cork dust pop-ups, a litre of hydro wheat or beta stim. That's £320 delivered direct to your door. Do check out dnabaits.com and use the code CARPCAST5 for an extra discount off all the stuff. Somebody else we like at the minute is Pinpoint Hooks. You can find them by www.pinpoint-hooks.co.uk, and they're basically hook sharpening kits. They sell their own hooks, which are very similar, if not actual, the old Ace hooks that were launched under the Terry Hearn name and design, and then it seemed to have disbanded Ace just after that. Though I believe they are knocking about on a smaller scale, but yes, they sell what are those hooks called, Mark?
Next gen hooks. They're the ones that well, they are the same hooks as the old Ace razor points. And I remember all the hype that was about the razor points when they came, and I used a few myself. You know, this like a stiff figure chodok and the ziggle they did, and I was well impressed. But I've had some of the Curveshank next gen hooks from Pinpoint, and wow. They are so sharp. It's unbelievable.
They're really, really sharp, yeah. And then we had a few questions about hook sharpening recently. And we get a lot of questions into our Facebook and stuff. You know, is it really worth it? Is it worth buying the Jag kit? Is it worth buying the Pinpoint Hooks kit? And I say, not only is it worth it, it's going to save you a fortune. I actually replied in one of the posts the other day that... I used to change my rig. So let's say fishing three rods on a three night session, when I was really keen fishing, you know, quality lakes for a big fish, and you know low stock lakes, and you don't want to mess up a chance when you get it, I would change my rigs every day. I'd have three new rigs, so three night session I would use nine hooks, nine, you know, 7-8 inch lengths of hook link, and then obviously all the associated gubbin, shrink tubing and bits and bats and whatever. Now that adds up. If you're using a pack of hooks every session, bear in mind a pack of hooks is 10 hooks and you're using nine of them, you know, there's going to be one in that pack that's not quite as sharp as all the others, you know, that you probably don't use. So you're basically using a pack of hooks a session at what, £5 for most hooks, around that sort of price point, using nine lengths of eight inch on average, ten inch really by the time you've tied it and cut it off and stuff. So you could be using up to 9 foot of hook link. In fact, yeah, to get a 6-7 inch hook link, you're using a foot, aren't you? So using 9 foot of hook link every single session, and what is it, £10 a spool for 5 meters?
You are sounding like a true Yorkshireman right now.
Well, it adds up, doesn't it? I mean, it certainly adds up. I would use that on a session. If I'm fishing for, you know, specific fish, I was fishing a Drayton Res, you know, I'd reuse the rigs after every fish because you know you're going to keep catching. But, you know, if I'm fishing my Syndicate Lake and I'm after some fish, I want to make sure I'm fishing as effectively as I can, the sharpest hooks I can. I'll change them every day. Now, I'm not particularly tight, but with a hook sharpening kit, I will not only not change my rig every day because I'll touch the hook up, not only will I not change it, I'll get two sessions out of it. I'll get six nights out of a rig. So where I would have normally used two packs of hooks, you know, 20 foot of hook link material plus all the other bits, I'm using like 1/9 of it, of that stuff. So for the sake of you know, buying a hook sharpening kit, whichever company you choose, it's going to save you a fortune long term. Or maybe you were a bit tight yourself, and maybe you didn't change your rigs as often as I did. You're just going to be fishing better because every morning or every time you reel in, every time you recast, just touch the hook up. So if you weren't changing your hook on a 3-day session, you're probably fishing blunt hooks by day three because, you know, no matter what hook you've got, they corrode in the water and they round off the point. So you're just going to catch more fish using a hook sharpening kit and touch them up. You don't have to go crazy and file all the hooks down. You can just literally use the stones and sharpen them up. But you can buy all the gear from www.pinpoint-hooks.co.uk. They're a fantastic firm. They sent us some hook packs that we've given away in competitions, and we've also got a couple to give away on the Carpcast social at Royce, don't we, Mark?
Yes, we have. I'm just going to... It's not a match, it's not a competition, but it's always nice to have something up for grabs. So I think it's just going to be the biggest carp from each lake.
Yeah, it's going to get a hook kit. Again, you can get a discount off all their stuff on the website using the code CARPCAST10, and they will give you a 10% discount. They've supported as well Pinpoint Hook, so do check out their website, because they've given us, that'll be four sets of hook sharpening kits to give away. They obviously sell all their own hooks as well, which Mark went through, and there's no hook that comes close to the sharpness. Every hook is 100% tested. So do check out the stuff, pinpoint-hooks.co.uk, and use the code CARPCAST10 for even more money off.
Yes. Also, if you are a shop who's maybe interested in the products and stocking them, contact Mark Wilson. The email address is on the website.
Yes, go on then. You may want to stock all their products, and they seem pretty decent. They've supported us, so go and check out their website. A few things on the net this week, Mark. Have you seen much?
It's on the net. It must be true.
Yeah, one thing I've been enjoying is this 10 fish stories in 10 days thing that people are nominating each other for. Have you seen these? You know what I'm like. I love the history stuff and reading all the old stories of old fish gone by. And I've been really enjoying it, especially something like, you know, Cy Giblin's been doing them, and it obviously did a lot of time on St. Ives, eventually catching the lady of a 60-pound. And I've been really enjoying some of them. Have you? No one's challenged you yet, have they?
Nobody's challenged me. I'm not sure. While, you know, a little bit of ego, I'm quite happy to put up 10 stories of, but I've probably only caught 10 significant fish that I have a story about, and two or three of them are stories that I've kind of saved writing a detailed story about, just in case I ever did a book one day. I'm not sure I ever will do a book though, so I'd be tempted, but yeah, no, nobody's nominated me, and I'm not unhappy about that, to be quite honest. But I have enjoyed reading some of them. Cy Giblin's especially, I loved the story of that river chunk that he had. Did you read that one?
Yeah, I did, yeah. It's on the subject of nominations, did no one nominate you for press ups either then?
No, I'm quite glad about that one. Having broke my collarbone quite badly a number of years ago, I still have no strength in that arm, and I'd be surprised if I can do 3 push-ups unless I just learn to do them on my left arm. But
that would be impressive.
I'll start doing them, then it just collapses, like it gives way after a bit. Not that I'm a weakling, so I've started going to the gym again, and trying to strengthen my arms and shoulders, but I just collapse after a couple. Like, I just hit the floor, it like gives way. So yeah, I'm quite glad nobody nominated me from that. And the fishy stories, Martin Clark's been, I've been reading his every day. He's been doing some interesting ones. I wonder if it's worth getting Martin on the show. If you'd like to hear Martin, then maybe we should get him on.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure he's got some brilliant stories. I remember reading his, was it In Search of Big Carp? His 1,842 piece series in Carp World. It was about, you know, it just seemed to run forever. I remember reading lots of Harefield stuff and Taplow and all these other lakes he fished. He's certainly a wealth of captures and knowledge.
Taplow and Summerlees were the two kind of the secret ones in his first book, weren't they? He didn't really mention the name of... he had that fantastic fully scaled out of Summerlees as well. Which was, it was a cracking fish. I noticed in the post underneath, that was one of his stories this week, and I noticed underneath that he said that fish was still alive, but it can't be anywhere near that size, can it? It was like 45 when he caught it years ago. I know a lot of the Summerlees fish died, didn't they, many years back, but... I'm not sure. He seems to think that one's still alive, but it can't still be a good 40. I wouldn't have thought, maybe I'm wrong, but I'd thought we'd hear about that lake a lot more if a fish that nice was still that big.
This is some uber secretive people on there who want to keep it to themselves, or
yeah. Well, it's not apologies to them, those anymore, people.
So. Yeah, we've just told everyone that there's a real old, really desirable, I think it's former classic cart winning fish still in there.
Yeah, apologies to anybody fishing that lake if we've just blown you up.
Maybe. I don't even know where it is anyway. I know it's down south somewhere.
Down south, it's off the M25, isn't it? It's around, sort yeah. of, going around towards Yateley Way.
Oh, you're going to, so no, you've only blown away the fish, you're now going to give directions.
It's not hard to find, is it? It was hardly a secret lake. But anyway, yes, I have enjoyed reading a lot of these stories. The ones I've read, every single one, is Cy Giblin and Martin Clark. But yeah, I'm looking forward to, as these nominations go around, people are really interesting. Some people are just good storytellers as well. I think that's the key to it. It's not just, here, look at me, I've caught a nice fish. It's I think the challenge is about the story, isn't it? So people have been writing mini chapters of books, really. Maybe we'll just steal them all and release our own book. Just put them all in.
Here's another thing I'll mention while we're on about on the net or on YouTube. One that I've enjoyed is Dave Lane's videos. He recently put like a four-parter out and culminated in his capture of an old adversary of mine, Colin from The Shallow.
Yes, I saw that. Is it 850 or something he had recently?
Yeah, that's the one. That is phenomenal. When you think it's eight different 50s from, I believe, eight different waters.
Yeah, that's fairly impressive. I mean, we know Ian Stott's had 850s at least from one water that's got a shed load of 50s in. It's very different to catching.
It's 850s that includes Two Tone, Mary, the Black Mirror, Bergfield Common. These are not just any old fish, these are iconic fish.
They're iconic fish, and the key thing is that they were the only 50 in the lake at the time. I know Bergfield's recently done a new 50, but generally it was the cream of the crop, or the biggest fish, or the one most people joined for. It was the 150 in each lake. So you're essentially you've basically completed the lake, haven't you? It's like Pokemon. Catch them all, not catch them all, catch the big one.
Let's not talk about Pokemon. People think we sort of carp fishing and sitting in tents behind buzzers. All this Pokemon Go. Oh man. Although, as someone did at work did point out to me, it's getting kids out of the bedroom and actually getting a bit of exercise and fresh air instead of just sat there vegetating in front of a computer. So it does have a good point, but
I don't think anything wrong in it. Not that I've even downloaded the game anything myself, but I don't see how anybody could call anybody for doing that. You know, I've seen friends of my friend list, you know, non-anglers that are gamers, you know, that do sit at home, and you know, they're kind of defending themselves because everyone's taking the mickey out of them, so it's pathetic, grown men going looking for Pokemon. But these guys are going out and doing 5-6 miles a day at the weekend, walking with the missus and the kids and stuff. Yeah. You know, I think it's great.
It does. It's like, my wife does this geocaching thing. It's in a way a lot very similar to that. They use GPS to go and find little treasures, little Tupperware boxes hidden in the woods where they sign a log and swap treasures and now people do it to find imaginary pictures on the phone.
It's on the net. It must be true.
Well, it's whatever floats your boat.
It's a hobby, isn't it? I don't think there's anything wrong in it at all. I've read a few more sinister things about the company that provided the funding for this, for the software and stuff. You know, it's basically a company that provides all the stuff for the US. Basically the spy stuff, you know, and it's another way of control, but they're trying to control us all the time anyway, so you know, why not have fun while they're doing it anyway? So
Have you been listening to an Eddie Bravo conspiracy theory again?
It wasn't Eddie Bravo, no, but it was a factual piece, I think it was in Vice or something, and it's basically saying that the company that provided all the funding for the company to make the app have provided funding for loads of US security, you know, CIA security projects, so it's definitely connected somewhere, and obviously because they know that the way it was explained in the thingy, it knows if you sat on your sofa for 5 hours a day. The info can be used for all sorts of stuff, for TV marketing, for times people are sat in front of the television. It's basically, you know, you've installed spyware on your phone. It knows if you sat in your front room for 6 hours a day. It knows if you move upstairs at what time you go to bed. It know, you know, because to actually produce these Pokemons near you, it like it makes them appear. It has to know where you are. And for how long you've been there or how long you've been looking, and you know, the more you look, the more like rare ones you get in certain areas, and you know, it's, that's how the app works. But I think the software, that's not why it's been developed. It's been developed for tracking and market research for people's habits. You know, you get to find out that, all right, this many people go and visit Alton Towers on a Saturday. It knows if you've got the Pokemon app, it knows exactly how many people go and visit Madame Tussauds in London on a Saturday, because you know it's tracking you.
Yeah. Well, how many people with the app go to Madame Tussauds? But just let me ask you this. I had a conversation again at work, and I think it's all alien technology.
Go on.
Well, think about it. How much has technology advanced since Roswell? Since the Roswell incident, I think Steve Jobs was an alien. Instead of taking over the world, he thought, I can make a few quid here, or a few dollars. He invented, you know, Apple and iPhones and whatever else he did. I think he was an alien in disguise from Roswell.
Well, we could go down the tin hat route here. As you know, I do keep an active interest in this sort of stuff, but Steve Jobs was an avid user of psychedelics. Now there's some particular psychedelics, mainly known as ayahuasca, of which DMT is the active agent, and it is quite strongly believed these days that most of Christianity and most of the fables in the Bible were written under the influence of ayahuasca, which is a plant. The
figures.
Acacia bush, which you know, Moses was it Moses?
Yeah, Moses spoke to the burning bush, and
yeah. Now a lot of these things, when people take these psychedelics, these very strong psychedelics, the ayahuasca and the DMT and stuff, they all see the same things. They see this burning bush. Now, obviously, if you've sat in front of a bush, munched its berries, and they're extremely psychedelic, then there's a very good chance that bush is going to look red and on fire type thing. There's a number of books about the connection between Christianity and psychedelics, and I'll tell you what, you can't argue with a lot of it. It explains a hell of a lot of things that are pretty unexplainable, and there's nothing appeared in the world since that's, you can go, oh yeah, that's what they meant by that thingy, you know, like there's nothing, the sea's never parted, the, you know, that there's you know, we've never had anything to remotely connect to it, except if you've taken ayahuasca, DMT, mushroom, psilocybin, acid, you have all those experiences, literally every single one of them, and a lot of people report the same experiences. Anyway, Steve Jobs was an avid user of psychedelics. He was very into acid and all those sort of stuff, and they reckon that's where a lot of his ideas and creations came from. Well, they don't, I mean, he said it himself, he said exactly that. I've heard an argument recently that it's a breach of our human rights to make psychedelics illegal because of the benefits of them. You can cure depression, you can make people face it, all sorts of stuff. It's commonly used in post-traumatic stress disorder treatment. I got my tin hat on for a little bit. You push me down the line.
I know, it's always good to send you off on that route.
You opened the can of worms there. So I apologise for all your non-believers, and now I just think I'm crazy. Jimmy's rant. Yeah, Steve Jobs is an alien. Let's leave it at that.
Yeah, he is. But if you think, you know, 50 years before and after Roswell, advances in technology, before, you know, we've been creeping along, afterwards it's a sprint.
Well, I also heard a pretty believable story. I know it's rubbish, but it sounded good when I heard it, that Bill Gates was friends with, they reckon anyway, the first microchip came from Roswell. I'm sure it was a microchip. It basically appeared not long afterwards. I forget this. I'm not going to repeat a story that I can half remember now because it would just sound rubbish. But they reckon that spaceship that crashed at Roswell, if a spaceship crashed, had this technology on it, a microchip, and it was something to do with IBM. Like whoever was president at the time, their mate owned IBM, or IBM, their mate started IBM immediately after Roswell in the 60s, and it got passed on to Bill Gates, and that's why he invented the first PC. I don't know. I mean, I've looked into Roswell a lot over the years. I don't believe that any alien spaceship landed there. I do believe quite a few things, and I definitely do believe that we are not the only living body in the universe. It's almost impossible for that to be the case, that we're the only Earth that has a livable environment. It's rubbish and billions of planets. Whether we'll ever see any of them, who knows? Well, maybe they're too far away. But to think we're the only planet out there is a little bit naive, I think.
I do agree with you there. I mean, do you think there's another planet out there with, you know, 500-pound carp on it?
Maybe. Would you leave Earth? if where are we going with this?
Instead of going over to Eurowac, we're all hungry, you just
Mars.
Drive your van onto a spaceship through the wormhole.
Through the wormhole and on Mars, it's like there's like a rainbow lake that's just big, full of islands, and all the carp are 400 pound, and they're throwing 300s back from the boat without even taking them back to the bank.
Yeah, but do you have to play them from the boat? Is that in the rule? Or should we not go down that one again?
Oh, don't go down that one again. I did ask Kevin's opinion of my trip to Gravia's, and he made an extremely valid point, which was the only point I was trying to get across to Luke, is look, we're on holiday, we paid for something and we're not getting what we paid for. Like, so there's two ways: give us the money back or let us have what we're paying for. It's one or the other. And Kevin said exactly that, and obviously Kevin's a businessman who has run lakes in various places, UK and abroad, and you know, we're a customer and he's selling something. If we're not getting what he's selling for, you get your money back. I mean, that's how business works. You know, if you go and buy something, you go and buy a pot noodle from the shop and there's only half a pot noodle in there, you get your money back. It's that simple.
Half a pot noodle in a pot noodle anyway.
That is true.
When was the last time you had one?
Jaffa cakes.
Oh, yeah.
If you bought a pack of Jaffa cakes, there was only half of them in there, would you get your money back? Yes, you'd get it all back, not half of it back, you'd get it all back.
I'd burn the shop down.
They put that picture up with millions of packs of Jaffa cakes. That was something on the net that we saw.
Oh, where he's like laid on the floor and they're all around his head with a little kitten at the top. That is our competition winner. He's Ben Russell, and those Jaffa cakes are coming to the Royston Social.
Ah,
this is a thank you for winning the competition, giving him the free spot from his picture that he put a lot of effort in. He went out and bought everyone a ton of Jaffa cakes. So, well, I think they're all for me. I don't know what everyone else is going to do. But yeah, yeah, that was Ben. And we'll see you there, Ben. And well done again for winning. It's something we forgot to announce on the last competition. So I contacted him. And it's just reward for the effort he put into the picture. Everything we put in the car paint sheep, including the sheep, which I've told him to bring along. Was in the picture with the slack lines and the Jaffa cakes and the drop shotting rods. What else was there?
I can't remember. It was a fantastic picture, and
yeah, we're looking forward to seeing you there, Ben.
Yes, I've got a couple of worth of looks, actually.
Worth a look.
Oh, got there.
I completely forgot about the first one. The new Urban Banks is out, the UK version. I know I was with Alan when he filmed the Eurobanks, which is the Urban Banks in Europe version. But yeah, UB8, Urban Banks 8, is now out and really worth a look on the net. It's filmed at the Wharf in Cardiff in Wales, which I believe that's now a syndicate. It's certainly controlled anyway, but it has been free fishing for many years, and there's been some cracking carp in there, and it's it's not quite as photogenic urban style as you remember the Manchester one on the
Ollie did a job there, did.
Yeah, it's not quite, but it's close to being as good as that. And it's certainly worth a look. You can check it out on the Urban Banks page. It's on the Nash TV page on YouTube. But it really is interesting. And Alan's energy and ability is second to none, as people will know. And the other worth a look is you, Mark, isn't it? You're in...
I'm always worth a look.
You're in Cartworld this time.
Yeah, I've got an article in the latest Cartworld. It's nice to be popping up in the magazines now. It's been obviously all done through the JRC connection, but it's nice. And having an article in Cartworld, I remember the first time I got one in there, I was so proud. And still am, to be honest. It's kind of like the, it's the pinnacle of magazines. And to get in there, it's a good moment. So I've just written about, to be honest, the article started off as with a working title of the first 20 years. But yeah, there's so much in there, you can't condense it. So it was basically this kind of whistle-stop tour about, a couple of, fishing, not just the fishing, not just what happened, but, just some of the thoughts and feelings that go into that sort of thing. So I'm not going to give too much away, but there's some other good stuff in there as well. And it's got Dave Levy on the front, who has been spanking hot, and I think it's won like 540s he's had.
Yeah, it's been doing well. I did notice that. Yeah, so check it out. Check out the Urban Banks 8 and check out this month's Cartworld. Something else just popped up on my news feed today as well. Corda do a decent amount of free video content on their website, along with articles and stuff.
It's on the net. It must be true.
And an article by Elliot Gray popped up. Everyone seems to be sharing it on our newsfeed for some reason. And it's basically saying that he uses slack lines as often as he can. We've spoke about the slack lines versus tight lines debate, and I didn't think it was a debate anymore. I thought everybody now knows that, slack lines are a bit of a fad, and there is a specific situation where you can use slack lines, and that's basically where you have absolutely nothing between you and your spot, like zero weed.
Is about 5 foot from the bank.
Yeah, or your spot is like right in the edge. It's literally the only time you would ever, because you just can't get your line completely flat on the bottom, because there's always something in between. And if you're fishing slack line, you're just cutting down your indication and the line's lifting up normally anyway. I mean, unless you dye the lake, and like, where do you never have anything between the line? Anyway, I was quite surprised to see that he says he uses slack lines permanently, literally as often as he can.
I've not read the article. Does he give a reason for this? Johnny's got to explain his thinking behind it.
He does say that, when there isn't, the best time to use slack lines is when there's nothing between you and your rig. He does make that distinction, but he kind of says he tries to use them all the time, and I don't get it. I did go, over 10 years ago, 12 years ago, when the slack line phase first came out, it made a bit of sense to me to use slack lines. But having, watched Rob Hughes' underwater filming and stuff of slack lines, I think the indication is more important than anything.
Yeah, without a doubt. And the other point, I've made it before, so I'm going to just brush over it, but especially in times after high winds, how do you, even on clear lakes, how do you know there's not zebra mussel encrusted few twigs on the bottom that your line's going to be laid on? It's like, come here, give me a cut off, please.
Yeah,
there's my line nowhere near it.
There's all sorts of stuff. And the cynical side of me, kind of, just when I saw that article, the cynical side of me kind of thought, Corda make a bobbin that's designed for slack lines. The Stow bobbin is specifically for slack lines. I mean, that's why the chaps on Elstow invented it. To be able to fish like that. Elstow 1 is a lake where slack lines, I can see the benefit of fishing slack lines on there. Certainly when it was, a pressured water with extremely wise fish. I think the fish are a lot younger and come through again now, aren't they? I think it's kind of a different group of fish in there now. But, they were invented for one purpose. But obviously with Corda, that's the bobbin that they sell then I can see why they would be trying to put out articles endorsing Slacklines. But that's me being cynical at all. Yeah, they do look nice and stuff, the stow bobbins, but I don't think it's an all-round bobbin. It's a purpose-made bobbin for a specific task.
I believe. I agree with you. It's. I was going to say it looks like a piece of cut-down biro, but that would be me being very cynical.
Have you seen anything else on there? I'll tell you what I saw on the net.
Go.
It's on the net. It must be true.
Rob Mayling made a comment. I don't know if it was tongue-in-cheek or if there's some personal motive here. He made a bit of a dig at the recent BCAC match on Raysbury, where I think only three fish were caught. And made a bit of a dig of, like, whose idea was it to have a match on Raysbury? Which I thought was a really odd comment. You know, I like Rob. You know, spent a lot of time talking to him over the years, where I'm still promising me he's going to come on the Carpcast. So I don't really want to jeopardise that. But it seemed a really odd comment to me. There's been many matches on Raysbury recently. I mean, Raysbury is actually now the official home of the England Carp Team England. You know, that's where their headquarters is, that's where their base is. I mean, it's been stuffed full of fish by the new owners. It's, you know, to have a match on the old Raysbury would have been crazy, obviously. Yeah. But it's stuffed full of fish now. So I don't really know why he made that comment, but he has been took to task. You know, there has been on the net a bit of a kickoff, including Rupert, who now runs the fishing on Raysbury. Got stuck in.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
I did, yeah. I did see Mr. Mayling's comment, and I don't know if Mr. Mayling is stuck in the old school, basically, which is obviously where he's from, where he made his name, and, you know, wrote some brilliant books that I'd recommend to anybody. But Raysbury is not the Raysbury it used to be, and, you know, for good reason. And I'd love to I'm keep me here promising myself a session down there, but I'm sure I will eventually. But yeah, it's not. This match, you say, is only three fish caught. There's been other matches on there where it's been absolutely smashed. So,
Cutsras, including there was an article, was it in one of the recent Carp Talks that we pushed, where that I forget who it was now, they won the match and they had a 40 pounder while they were at it during the match. Who was it now? It was the front cover of one of the recent Carp Talks that we promoted in our Carp Talk feature at the end. I think Rob's actually maybe deleted that comment now. Does seem to have vanished. But yeah, maybe there's something personal going on there that I don't know about. But, you know, things aren't personal when you go and post them on social media, are they? Everybody gets stuck in. So it seemed odd. I mean, yes, you know, lakes fish rubbish. You know, like, all lakes can fish rubbish at certain times, unless you've got out and out stuffed full of fish, you know, thousands and thousands of carp. Type lakes, you know, your Drayton reses and stuff like that, you know, it can happen. Lakes turn off, but
yeah, I've fished lakes, well, I'm sure we both have, which, you know, we know the stuff full of fish and they just seem devoid. It happens, especially through this time. I'm just making this is my excuse anyway, because if I went there I probably would blank. But now all lakes switch on and off.
To be fair, the heavier stocked the lake, the more chance there is of me blanking. If ever anybody says, go and fish this lake, it's stuffed full of fish, you'll never blank on there. I've never blanked on it. It's a very high chance I'm going to blank. It's just like as soon as somebody puts that pressure on me, I'll probably blank.
Yeah, I'm going to put that pressure on you at Royston. You are under pressure now to show us all the way. The Great Jamie Classic. Catch us some fish.
Yeah, I mean,
you are cursed.
This is I'm just reading Rupert Whiteman's post. Rupert Postman, Rupert Whiteman made a post having a dig back at Rob Mayling and Big Carp back there, which seems to have had dozens and dozens of replies. So I think Rob's deleted his little pop at Raysbury. But as happens on social media, you put something out there, doesn't matter, you deleted it, people have screenshotted it and other people retaliate. So yeah, good old. We haven't had a social media beef for a little while, have we?
No, it's nice to be on the sidelines instead of in the middle as well. I'll just get me popcorn. Is there anything else on it, or should we move on? We've not done a true review for a while.
I promised to do a true review of the Slaphead Bobbins, which I don't think I did I?
True review.
I don't know. I think you did, actually, when I think about it.
Yeah, I definitely spoke about them. I don't think I did a straight up true review.
Have you used them?
I have, yeah. I've used them quite a bit recently.
Have
now.
You had a run with them?
yes, yes, I have. I definitely have. I use the strong arms in France on Luke Moffitt's Lake, and I've also used the long chains. I've used the heavy heads, which are the 40 gram, the big ones. And I think I've got the 10 gram ones, which I use with the chains. So I've basically got a kit where I can do everything. After using the arms for a bit, I like them. I use them at like long range with the weight set to the heaviest. But do you know what? I just like chains. I always have done. I remember the original Fox Mark 1 swingers when they came out, which don't look great, but they were actually a really good design, because you could fish slack lines with them. Because if you remember, the metal arm actually went it was like a circular loop that went behind. You imagine a seesaw at the park. Yeah, so you put an equal weight on both sides, and it should technically balance. And then if you put so if you could slide the weight all the way to one side, the end that your bobbin's on, then it's going to be heavy. And you, but you can also slide it the other side of the pivot to take weight off it, so you can counterbalance the actual weight of the bobbin and make it completely neutral. You can actually make it lighter than neutral, so that your bobbin just pings up in the air. So I used those for years, and I stopped using them because they became dated. Even though they were functionally very good, they kind of became dated when everybody started using hangers. I think was it Solar that first brought out kind of bobbins on their own, you know, without being attached to either a monkey climber.
Bobbins have been around forever, you know.
Well, defined forever, because they certainly weren't around when. So they certainly weren't around in the monkey climber days, bottle tops.
Yeah. Well, again, bottle tops. I remember the first bobbins I had, I made myself from some Kinder eggs and some of my mum's hair clips and a length of Dacron.
Yeah,
you could adjust the weight by filling them with water.
Ah, that's a good idea. I used to use Dacron as well as my to tie my bobbins onto my bank stick so they didn't go flying. But I mean, the early days of the bottle tops, they did used to go flying. It's the other way around.
Yeah, they did.
They're all over the place. But I mean, for many years there was monkey climbers, and after monkey climbers there were like the Fox Mark 1, then the Mark 2 swingers, which I had both versions of, and they're extremely functional. Like, probably should be using them now, you know, because they'd never blow side to side in the wind, and you could completely fish slack lines with them, because you could take all the weight off, so they were weightless, completely weightless, or as I said, less than weightless. And I got kind of peer pressured by my setup looking dated into getting bobbins, and I was always like against bobbins and chains, because I was like, they blow around in the wind. But once you get adept at setting your rods, you know, and you've got the right tension of line and stuff, they don't beep in the wind. Maybe they do if you've got Delkims, because they're vibration sensitive. But basically on roller bobbins, I can be in a big wind and the bobbins are swinging side to side on a chain and they don't beep, because the distance of line is not changing. You know, if you're using a nice balanced weighted bobbin, you know, the line's not going up and down. If the line's going up and down, then the swinger's going to beep as well. You know, any sort of swinger arm or strong arm or whatever's going to beep if the line's going up and down. But side to side, bobbins don't beep. So I then used bobbins for many, many years. When I saw the Nash strong arms, I thought, here we go, extreme, because they look slick as hell, an extremely cool looking arm again. I want to go back to using an arm. Anyway, I've used them for quite a bit, and I still like chains. I've decided that chains are for me now. The arms were great for fishing at range. I can put quite a lot of weight on them.
Do chains excite you?
Whips and chains don't excite me. No, not in particular. No, bondage is not my bag.
Don't knock it till you've tried it.
I think there's a market for something extremely cool looking, very slick, that you can counterbalance the weight, i.e. it works on a pivot where you can, you know, like a seesaw where you can move the weight behind the pivot, a bit like how Fox did it with the Mark 1 Mark 2 swingers. But you know, they don't look great, those, you know, in the age of carp tartiness, the function of them was pretty good. But some, you know, the way the slap heads are, the way that you can interchange the different heads onto the arm, I love all that. And I do like the look of them. The functionality is great. But I like chains as well. And again, the slap heads, I think the way that the line clips into the slap heads is an improvement on the last ones. I've only had them a couple of months now, so I've not used them through a muddy, wet winter and seen how they hold up with grit in them and stuff. But they're smooth, they're slick, they look nice. I've got the heaviest size of bobbin. I forget if it's 40 gram or 50 gram, the big ones. But I've got those, and I've got like the 10 grams ones as well for kind of like general angling, and I really like them. They are nice. I would strongly recommend that you go and try them. What are you using for hangers at the minute?
I've got the JRC Curve bobbins, which I know we have done. I've done a true review on before. It's one of the early ones I did, but you know, before I had the JRC connection as well, I was using them, and not too dissimilar to the slappers, to be honest. You know, you get them with a nice little ball chain, which I think is about 8 inch long. Yeah. You get the arm, which again combats the windy conditions. You also get extra add-on weights, which is good if you do any range fishing, which I do quite a lot. And I like a just heavy big bobbin anyway.
Yeah, so those 40 gram slap head bobbins, I've got all the black ones. They do black and white, both look really smart, but I think the black does look really slick. So I like 40 gram heads and the 10 gram heads with the longer of the two chain. We've spoke about bite indication loads over the episodes, haven't we?
Yeah, and I do have to ask though, why black? Because it gets to like dusk or twilight, you're not going to see them.
I've got really nice, sexy purple isotopes that go in the front of them. They look really smart.
Oh, you need to go out more if isotopes are becoming sexy. Get some red ones. They'll be sexy. You can have, see what they attract to your swim on a night.
Yeah, I mean, fluorescent. We've spoke about this loads, haven't we? The fashion over function. As I said, the Fox Swingers were great with the counterbalancing feature off them, but they didn't look great. And I was pressured into, you know, nobody pressured me, I pressured myself, but seeing everybody's setups looking way slicker than mine, you know. And I do remember actually somebody somewhere saying, like, I can't believe you're still using swingers, because like nobody used them anymore. And I'd had these 10 years or more, these swingers, maybe longer. And I remember feeling a bit pressured into them. You know, getting with the bobbins, you know, just a chain and bobbins. I like ones where you can interchange. So we speak about Roger a lot on here, and yeah. Roger's got the most unconventional setups, but they're always very practical for different situations. He has them fluorescent, elastic in place of the chain, you know, that you can see from miles away, and then he'd put a split ring on an end of them, and he'd have different bobbins that he could screw into the top of it, you know, completely like custom made. But I guess something some sort of fluorescent you know, like day glow bobbin would be more practical on my hangers, but they wouldn't look all nice and black like my entire setup looks at the minute. I mean, they do look good.
It's not practical. I want a bobbin where I get a single bleed. I want to open one eye, and if it's moved up or down, I want to see exactly what has happened. I'm not into these that do actually light up though. That's just blinding. That's a bit too much for me. I just want a like little dull light. I just want to know what's going off, if there's any movement. And if I can't see them because they're black, But again, I think I've still got them in my garage somewhere. Some of the old white slapheads. I did like those. Go on the white ones.
Yeah, very old school. Old school bobbins. But yeah, white or black. I have to say I'm very happy with my black. So is that a true review? Yeah. We covered JRC bobbins, bottle tops. Yeah. Fox Mark 1 swingers from back in the day. And the
Kinder eggs.
Kinder eggs, yeah, and the very slick looking new slap heads. But yeah, get your butt slapped.
Yeah.
True review.
Get your butt slapped. And you don't like bondage. Whips it. There's something that you're keeping. It's coming out.
Let's move on. I'll tell you what, I spoke to Kevin earlier today. Let's get him in right now.
I know you guys like a mass debate in the car. It's Kevin Nash with the Nash Debate.
So I'd like to welcome Mr. Kevin Nash back to the Carpcast for the monthly Nash Debate. We haven't actually done many shows between now and the last time you were on because of my holidays. But how have you been, Kev? What have you been up to?
Oh, work. You know, massively stressed today. I didn't really need to talk to you, Jamie. Lovely bits, I know, but you know, over the weekend they've announced the opening of Royston with a website and a pretty awesome video, and my phone hasn't stopped ringing this morning, and that's the thing. You know, I'm trying to do all my work and I'm constantly dealing with anglers' queries, which, you know, I love talking to anglers, but we've got a dedicated new line for the lake, and it transpires, it goes through to our normal switchboard. You know, I'm zero, I always like to take the customer line if I'm around, and so people just go through, get the zero and press me, and so I spent all morning trying to talk to anglers as well as do my day job. But yeah, I'm cool mate, life's good, wouldn't be anything else.
It does look fantastic, the video for the lake. I shared it yesterday on all our pages because obviously we've got a vested interest. We've got the Carpcast social on there next weekend. Really liking the look of it. That long lake looks interesting as well. It looks very stalky. It looks like it Alan's cup of tea, that lake. Is the stock similar in both of you? Like, how have you sort of managed the stockings and stuff?
Short answer, well, there's a number of points you raised there, but a short answer, the long lake that we call Kingfisher, we haven't got a clue what the stock is. On a warm, hot day when we first got it, you know, me and Alan counted well over 50 fish one day, and you know, you never see the whole stock in the lake. I estimate probably at least 100 originals in there, and that's why, you know, in our head there was a lot less in the Wood Lake, and so the fish we stocked have tried to balance both lakes at around 200 or whatever, and then as we get into it and understand what's being caught, then you know, I'll add more stock as I go along. Regards to your comment about interesting, it's a flat bottom, that one. Yeah. And what I'm taking out of it, there's no particular features other than it's got two ends, i.e. they definitely follow the wind, but there's no particular features, so it should be a pretty good lake in terms of, you know, they're not holding up in certain areas. I've always said a lot of lakes have only got four swims and two are better than the other two, but I just imagine they keep swimming round in a circle. It's definitely a margin water, and when I say margin, you know, I mean literally a few feet off the bank, which a lot of anglers think of margin is like 3 miles out, but it's definitely a real tight to the bank water. But
yeah,
the Wood Lake, that is mind-blowing interesting, and the lads went down and did a couple of test nights the week before last, and they had over 50 takes, by the way. But you know, the thing about the Wood Lake, we can't advise people because, you know, we haven't got a clue what's out there. Alan did a feature of Angler's Mound last week, and he said he was boating baits out to this margin under this bush, and he said, you know, the fish were patrolling along this margin. I think they had about 6 takes in about, I don't know how deep it was, I guess 3-4 foot of water, but it was 2 foot wide, this shelf, and then it dropped into 20 foot of water. You know, so there's some amazing, there's a plateau there where when the lads, you know, that test fishing, Lawrence was fishing off this plateau, it went up to only 3-4 foot, and he was hammering them in the daytime, but it was, the bream moved on at night, you couldn't get a take at night, you know, from a carp, you know, so there's so many features, so it'll be really interesting, you know, to learn how to fish it and how the best swims, you know, need approaching. Really excited about it.
Yeah, I am. When you said the bottom's very flat and there's not a lot of feature in the Kingfisher Lake, I mean, that screams margin to me. As long as there's a decent drop off close in, it's always the best feature in a lake, I think, the margin. As long as,
I'll tell you a story.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a story. I was walking around with Brian, our old bailiff, and he's got a Labrador. And I had Ridge, you know, my Frenchie, you know, but French bulldogs can't swim. And Ridge has gone down to the edge, and he thought this the grass tussocks were terra firma. He's gone straight in the lake, and I immediately thought, you know, that margin is at least 6-7 foot deep. Anyway, I've gone down the bank. Brian's Labrador, bless it, immediately knew Ridge was in distress, jumped straight in, grabbed him round the neck, and was trying to push him to the bank, but he had Ridge in front of him, and so he couldn't swim, so the poor, this Labrador was sinking and popping up, but bless it, it eventually pushed Ridge near enough to the bank for me to reach out and grab him, because I was worried about going in case I was over my head, you know, and then I'm trying to swim and deal with a Labrador and a Frenchie, but yeah, it, you know, you've got to be very careful, there's no way I would ever allow anglers to wade in there. It's one of the rules, and that's why I've got that wading rule. You know, those margins are so deep. They basically do drop off to 10 foot from the bank, you know.
Wow, that's an amazing story about the dog trying to rescue the other one. I've seen that a few times.
I was just stunned. You know, you'd immediately think the Labrador had just gone into play, but that Labrador went straight in and grabbed Ridge and was trying to push him to the bank. We underestimate animals, don't we?
We do, especially dogs. We've not had a dog since I was young, you know, with my parents, mainly because of my lifestyle. I'm 43, 44 on Sunday, actually, while we're at Royston.
Are you? Oh, yeah, that's right, you are.
So I'm a little more settled, bar these European trips, which we'll get onto in a minute. But I'm considering getting a dog. We have a cat. My girlfriend Rachel, she loves pets. Has been moaning about me to get a dog for ages. And
I've got a simple view, you know. So I go through periods like you of not having dogs because I absolutely believe no one should own a dog unless it can be with them basically all day long. You know, so many people leave them locked up in the house all day. It's just not good for the animal, I'm afraid. You know, when I had Khan, you know, it was when I had the first office, and they used to come into work every day, you know, and I've always had dogs only when I know someone can be with them all day long, me or the missus, whoever, you know.
So here's a topic that's not on the list then, fishing dogs. So I would like a dog that will behave itself on the bank. I don't want a really big dog because the house is not huge and dogs do smell. So I don't want like a huge slobbery type dog. I want a small... Rachel would like one that looks like a teddy bear. That's never happening. One of these, you know, all these little fluffy things that everybody's having at the minute. Mm-hmm. So I want something small to medium that will be good on the bank. If we have a child, Rachel's keen to have a child next year. If we have a child, he's going to be safe with the child. But, you know, I want a fishing dog. What should I be looking at?
Certainly not a Frenchie.
Yeah.
Because Ridge farts every 10 seconds. And, yeah, there's no, you know, I have to confess, I've taken fishing two nights and I brought him home. You know, not for that reason, but, you know, he's just so restless as well. Whenever I've had a dog, they sleep on the floor behind my bed sheet on a blanket. He wouldn't have it, kept jumping up trying to get the sleeping bag with me. Yeah. Bless him, I love him, but I don't think they're a fishing dog. I will say one thing. Having a small, medium-sized dog is a whole different world from having, you know, like Dobermans or that Bouvier, you know, like a grizzly bear. It's another world having a smallish dog, and they are more like your kids, you know, and there's so much more interaction. One breed that is great is a Westie. I bought Joe, my youngest, a Westie to give him a bribe him to do better at school, and that was an absolute character. You know, he used to take that round the lakes and everything. Good size. And you mentioned about smelling.
Yeah.
He never smelled doggy. I used to smell his fur because it used to smell of like straw.
Yeah.
You know, there is some breeds, you know, and also Westies don't really molt. You know, so to me in a house, I don't want that doggy smell and I don't want molting. Westies are great for that, but also, what are they called, cocker doos or something? The cross between a poodle and a spaniel.
Okay.
There's loads of different versions of them, and I saw one the other day. I thought, what is that dog? It was awesome. They come in all different sizes, and you know, presuming whatever size spaniel they're crossed with.
Yeah.
But as I say, but they were designed or crossed by the Americans specifically because they don't molt.
Yeah.
If you've got a house dog, they're two key requirements for me. It doesn't smell and it doesn't molt. Yeah, and I think as a rough rule, the longer hair breeds are more of a problem normally. Having said that, Annan's Labrador, God, has that got dog BO? But no, so that's not right. It's not short haired. But yeah, I would, you know, a Westie I would absolutely recommend. A lot of people have Jack Russells, but I hate the bloody things. But Westies are real characters. They're great with children, you know, and so they love foraging around hunt lakes because they're a ratter, really. They, you know. A Fenton Terrier, one of my boys has just got one, and that's a cute-looking dog. Great with black floppy ears.
Yeah.
I've never heard of the breed till he got it. They're a good dog, but... Yeah, and as I say, the ones crossed between poodles and spaniels are certainly good for the house.
Yeah, I've just got those Fenland Terriers up now. Yeah, they look nice. You're not not the first person to mention the Westies, the West Highland Terrier. That's definitely on the list. What about King Charles
Spaniels?
The
biggest problem you've got, Jamie, the problem with spaniels is they can really slobber, and you know, and then that gets into your carpets and they stink.
Right, got
yeah, it. Yeah, so you know, so that's how often the house you get that doggy smell. What was I say then? The problem you're going to have, and it's one of the biggest things, is finding a good one. When I got my boy, my Westie, I actually rang up the kennel club, and they said, we cannot recommend a breeder. I was taken aback. What? Yeah, the kennel club couldn't recommend a breeder. But then I went on to the Westie Society, or whatever they're called, club. They put me on to this lady. It was down near Hastings, and we went down all the way down to Hastings and got our Westie. And ironically, the guy used to be our art studio, he bought a dog from a Westie from the same breeder.
Right.
And, you know, he's one still alive, I think. You know, and I say they are a wicked breed. I really would recommend them.
That's you might,
and they're white, so you can see them in the dark when they run off.
that's a good shout. I mentioned Europe, as you are aware. I've just done a few weeks in Europe, and I know you used to go to Europe quite a bit, didn't you? I mean, you're a bit better located for the ferry and stuff, aren't you? Being not too far off the south coast. But I don't picture you as a foreign angler, but I know you used to go a lot, didn't you, with your pals?
Well, you know, can I point out, it was me that, you know, discovered the carp and the canaries and started all that in the 80s.
Well, yeah.
I guess, you know, you think of Rod Hutchins and all that lot. Well, you know, Rod and that lot started going over in the 80s, and that is a time I had other... waters, you know, like Harefield and all that, and there's so many people going and publicising. I didn't really want to just follow, but then in the at the beginning of the early 90s, Joe Taylor was going over a lot, and my friend Nigel Bobaway was going over with him, and some of the stories and stuff he was coming back telling me, you know, I thought, yeah, I've got to have a bit of this, you know, and so we started going over there, you know. Specifically hitting Santico back to there, because you know, I was just so transfixed by the stories I was hearing. You know, in those days there was no night fishing, or there might have been just two places, a church or whatever. And so we'd turn up, you know, drive round it, find out where all the anglers were, and go in completely opposite direction, because you know, they were attracting the gendarmes through behaviour and drinking, And so we had a boat that was basically an ocean-going rowing boat, because, you know, you can get pretty hairy on there, and we just jump in that. Nigel was used to row internationally, and so he had these rows made, these oars made that are 18 inches longer. You know, we had an electric outboard, and we could really cover some ground. And we just disappear into the wilderness, you know, and we were really sensible about it. We never believed the gendarmes wouldn't know we was there, because, you know, basically the French used to tell them when they was out fishing. So, yeah, we'd fish fully visible in the day, and then at night take our bivvies down, or if it was raining, I'd leave the bivvy up and I'd wind me rods in and have them all propped up against the bivvy. And a few nights we heard them coming through checking us, but what they didn't know is I had another set of rods in the reeds 100 yards down the bank. You know, but it was great times, you know, especially with Joe Taylor. He was like the villain of the French. I think if a gendarme nicked him, he got promoted. In actual fact, he got so hairy for Joe in the end, he gave up carp fishing. That's why he gave up carp fishing, because I think one more nick and he would have gone to prison over there. And that's when I think he then turned to Spain and catfish. But some of the stories I can tell you, like, you know, everyone fishing and then suddenly a shout went up in the middle of the night, and Ross threw the rod in the lake, and suddenly their version of the special forces has turned up. You got Dave Plummer spread eagled with a gun in his neck and all that. You know, it was great fun. And the time when Joe heard them coming and saw what was kicking off, he ran into the woods, right? Yes. And he hid in the woods. There was a campsite over the back, and what the gendarmes had done, they'd parked their car in the campsite and then come through and hit everyone. And he got away and hid in the woods and watched the lads get fog marched through the woods to the campsite. Well, those ahead of us in this time, the police, they used to have a computer in their car.
Yeah.
So they could immediately check on you, you know, see if you had previous, and so what the action would be, and or, you know, book you in, you know, as a first offence. Anyway, Joe's hiding in the trees. He saw the lads being booked by the gendarmes. Then he watched the car drive out the campsite. It went down a hill. You saw it come up and saw the townhouses as it went down on the top of the hill and then down the next one, right? All this had, like, taken 10 minutes. He's waited. He's gone out. He's chatting to the lads. And suddenly, there's a slap on his shoulder. "Good evening, Mr. Taylor." They dropped the copper off. They knew he was there somewhere.
Just left the guy there.
I could write a book just on those times, mate. I think I did mention one story in the first book, and me and Nigel, you know, suddenly the pest come out in the boat and a big spotlight towards us when Nigel was playing the carp. So we had to dive in the reeds, you know, and just had our noses out of the water when this boat is like 3-4 foot out away from us, the spotlight trying to find us. It then went and Nigel carried on playing his carp, you know. So we had some wonderful times out there. But yeah, I used to love the wildernesses, like Santa Cruz. I used to love the rivers, you know. And often we wouldn't ever see another angler, you know. It wasn't until Teriats, what was that, 3-4 years ago, that I'd ever been to a commercial water. And to be honest, except for that, I love Teriats. There's just something about it, you know. If I started going back to France again, I'd still try and find those, you know, non-commercial waters, you know. It's harder now, I know, there's, you know, less wilderness, but for sure there's some places, you know.
I really liked Holland as well. I've bought the year-long ticket to fish all the sort of Amsterdam area, which has got sort of more lakes than most of the other regions put together. But I think I spoke on the last episode. I cycled round, you know, this like 300 to 400 acre lake 2 nights in a row. I know it's got a stock of about 250 carp in there, up to mid-40s. Yeah. From what locals, I didn't see an angler any night. I was just like, wow, this is amazing. It's not that far away, you know, even from me up north, you know.
There's so much water there, Holland, but particularly Belgium. Belgium is just completely missed. You know, I'm in Essex, that's 4 hours to Belgium. You know, Yeah, I think Warnwell took longer in Dorset. Yeah,
but it takes me over 4 hours to get to yours.
Yeah, there is some amazing fishing in Belgium. You know, they got numbers of carp over 30 whatever kilos in those canals, and again, you know, so much water. You know, that's a country that is really neglected by the English, you know, and the adventure types. You know, there's lots still to be had out there. There truly is. Italy, the Alps. Had some great times in the Alps with Pinky, actually. You know, that was a decade later. You know, I got into fishing abroad with Pinky. We went to Austria, France, the Alps a couple of times. You know, some shining times. It's different for me. It's about freedom. You know.
Yeah,
so you're not curtailed by rules, you're not curtailed by not being able to move or whatever, you know, and all that stuff that, you know, we have to put up with in England. Don't get me wrong, I get a real buzz from the, you know, the real high pressured carp fish in England. You know, there's no water I like better than one where, you know, they know everything and they are under massive pressure, you know, to try and figure out a way of catching them. And, you know, you learn so much and you learn so many new techniques. You know, that's how the blowback rig come about, fishing for really, you know, the most pressure carp in the country. So I love that sort of fishing, but then I love just, you know, so the adventures, the freedom, and it has to be said, actually getting some action.
Yeah,
you know, and that's and that is a point. You know, those, especially those French fish, without a doubt, they've got much bigger appetites than the English fish. You know, it's probably a food source, it's crayfish, big mussels all day long. You know, and so you can pile in the bait and they start hitting that bait. You know, big appetites, and you get some. You know, get some proper action. Me and Nigel, when we was going to Sandy Cove, and it's so sussed, we was doing a max of, would you believe, 2-3 nights a week. You know, and this is well south of Paris, but it was worth it. You know, but we would locate those big shoals of carp, which were like wildebeest. But one weekend, I said to him, we're going to hold them, and we took over 500 kilo of bodies.
Wow.
Right? And we filled it in. And I'll never forget, I got up first thing in the morning, and honestly, Jamie, you could not look out without seeing a carp in midair. And I can still remember it to this day. We had so many carp in front, it was probably a couple of thousand, you know, that I couldn't look out without seeing a carp launching itself. We held him for 3 hours, and then it was gone. No, the air's out. The air's out. Yeah, and I've just come to the conclusion, you know, you could just never put enough bait in, you know?
Yeah, I've thought that many times, especially on well-stocked lakes, but I just like I say, I agree with you, the English fishing is quite unique, and it's been interesting. I've met a lot of the good foreign anglers while I've been away. We met Alan filming the Eurobanks in Holland, had a barbecue with, you know, the guys from Monkey Climber magazine, Bastille and everybody who's from Austria.
Great guys, aren't they?
Yeah, Belgium's, Dutch, you know, and these are all some of the better, you know, more involved in the industry type anglers. So I'm asking them about all the countries. They do kind of envy us, you know, with our waters, like say the little tricky waters. They just don't have those really, you know, these pressured fish. But they've got the style of angling, you know, turn up. 3 or 4 of you, somebody's got a really big barbecue, not a little portable thing that we have, you know, somebody's got a proper barbecue that you have in your back garden, they're blowing the boats up, they've got echo sounders, they're whipping 4 rods out. You can do this virtually anywhere you stop, you know, it's the style of fishing. I just, you know, fill it in, you know, maybe some of the lakes, they're waiting a couple of days, get a big shoal of fish come over them, then you can't keep a rod in the water, and there's just nothing like that in the UK, is there? There's nothing like
and,
that.
And, you just said a point there. There's that completely different dimension of the boat work, you know, and that's one of the things I really love. I love, you know, the fact they're using, you know, boats, you know, and, you know, and, you know, you've got to learn skills for that, you know, so
yeah,
it opens up a new dimension and a skill set. You know, I've had anglers on the church, you know, getting a boat, mate, you know, and the majority of them are frightened to. They're really wary, you know, and the ones that do, you just see, they've got they haven't got the experience to know how to play fish from a boat, you know. And they say it's another, you know, another learning curve and a string to, you know, your carp experience and knowledge. And I love it, absolutely love it.
Did you have any opinion on the experience I had at Gravier's with Luke Moffat?
as I listen to you, how can I say this? I said to myself, it wasn't a question of when, if, it was just a question of when. Yeah, I was thinking about, you know, discussion we had and listening to you before. I think it was going to kick off, Jamie. It was already a done deal before you arrived. You know, I think you've been wound up, you know, with past experiences or whatever. You know, and I think it was going to happen. But simple response, you cannot expect to offer a service and then not provide it. It was simple to me. Look, you either shut the flipping lake down or you don't. You can't tell me where I'm going to fish because the fish might be going to spawn. They're either going to spawn and you shut it down, full stop. No, I just don't think what he did was right and proper.
That was my exact argument to him. Shut it. And he went, well, I shut it 1 year and then they didn't spawn and it ended up being shut 8 weeks and I lost the money. And then they spawned the week after I opened it. I was like, well, that's not my fault. You know, you've just found a way to have your cake and eat it.
Yeah, it's a nature of the animal. Yeah, we've got it with Royston, you know. And, yeah, the rule will be that if we see them spawning, we all close and lads, you know, will be credited or be able to go back on. But, you know, you and I, Jamie, both know enough about carp to, you know, it might not be over on the first spawning. You know, I've seen carp spawning and off for 2 months.
Yeah.
Or more. If that's what it's got to be, it's got to be. But yeah, fish, carp care comes foremost, and then how you treat your customers is equal to that. Yeah, and then, you know, so.
Yeah.
The guy doesn't need the money, let's be honest. You know, as I say, you know, if he can't make that simple and clear decision to, yes, be thinking of his carp, but also be thinking of his customers, then, well, it's his problem. I would never go there after listening to your show, I'll tell you that.
No, there's a lot of people said that. And there was three lads from Manchester on the following week after us that some of my friends know them. I don't know them personally, but some of my friends do. They had exactly the same experience, even though it was...
He's one of them, though. He's a bit like Ryanair. I'd rather walk on hot coals than get on that airline. Yeah, after an experience I had. But yeah, they've got a captured audience, and he's got a captured audience with Scar. You know, so yeah, people will put up with the crap, won't they? You know,
that's the problem. Yeah, and the type of lake it is, it attracts the wealthier angler. It's not cheap. It's one of the dearest lakes in France. Mm-hmm. And some people, you know, have maybe got more money than angling skill. You know, and they're always going to go to that type of lake, I think. But yeah, I mean, it's frustrating, and it just reiterated the fact that, you know, I wasn't even slightly in the wrong. The fish still hadn't spawned the following week. The guys there the following week had exactly the same experience as us. He wouldn't let them fish near the fish, wouldn't let them fish in the margins, and they had one fish between three of them the following week. You know, they had another disaster.
Yeah, a big point, and yeah, you know, it's. Don't like talking about Cavanagh, don't want to relive that experience, but you know, we put so much into Cavanagh to try and make it such a great experience, because you know, you mentioned one,
yeah,
it's a lot of money for some guys, or you know, it's money for everyone, but the other thing is, it's also their holiday. Yeah, you know, and that's probably more precious in many instances than the money, you know, your precious holiday time, and you're so looking forward to it, and you've got your expectations, and then, you know, for a holiday go pear-shaped, you know, kind of ruins life for a little while, doesn't it, you know?
That was one of the points I made to Lou when we had it out at the end. You know, I said, we're on holiday, we're supposed to be enjoying ourselves, and I could see it hit a nerve with him, because I don't think he'd even considered that beforehand. You know, he actually said to us, well, you know, you should be just enjoying being here and having a barbecue with your mates. And that's when I said to him, I could spend the same money as what I've just spent here in Ibiza before, but you know, and all the cocaine and hookers in the world, you know, if I'm going to go and enjoy myself and not fish, you know, there are better ways to spend 3 grand or 3,400. He's put it up 400 this year.
is that how much it was? Jesus.
Yeah, it's a lot of money between three people. I mean, you can have four people on there, but two of you are never going to catch a carp up the Arundel Lake because you've got to fish in pairs. So three's the kind of the optimum number. Anyway.
Anyway, Jamie, it happened. Anyway. Move on.
Move on.
As I always say to the lads at work, it's happened. Move on.
Yeah. There's we've mentioned bait a couple of times already. I know, I don't know if you're ready to talk about your new bait project at the minute, but it's a bait I'm particularly excited about. Is that public knowledge just yet?
It's getting there. The reason it's not public knowledge is because I think you know we're moving the bait operation into a new real high-tech facility, and so in short we can't roll enough bait at the moment, and we're going to be rolling even less during the transition. But you know, since we started mass bait right at the beginning of the 90s, it's just stayed at the same level, and that's because we've never been out of supply. We could sell basically everything we could make and a lot more, hence complaints. But now it's new operation, we're ready to rock and roll, and I'm so excited about, if you like, you know, lifting mass bait up to where it should be, because you know, my view is, and I say it with absolute belief on my kid's life, that there's no bait company that can provide baits like mass bait can. You have our experience of what works and what doesn't over all those years, you know. So I'm really looking getting excited about being able to, you know, really get into making enough bait, you know, to be able to, you know, approach all the people in the way we want to. But yeah, we've got a new bait, as you've been
alluded to
suggesting. I don't quite want to let it all out, but all I will say, it's called Key Cray. I won't go into its makeup, but it is possibly the most successful bait we've ever been to launch. When I was on it and I saw the immediate reactions I got and friends, I likened it to when we first got the Scopex squid in the early 90s, you know, and I don't know any bait that did so much devastation on carp lakes throughout Europe than the Scopex squid. It's at least as good as the Scopex. Yeah, and still does, you say. It's anglers that think they have to have a new bait, not the carp, but it's at least as good as the Scopex squid. Gary thinks the attractor in it could actually be better. Well, that's a statement to make. But yeah, we're really excited. We've been testing various versions and tuning it up, because the thing about producing a bait, it's about trying to get it to work on as many variants of water as possible. You know, that was one of the things of the key HMV. You know, we knew it wouldn't work on some waters because, you know, it's all about pH and all that, but you know, but on enough waters, you know, it would catch the biggest or the really caught, you know, very quickly. So you know, that's the nature of bait. But this one's about tuning to try and make it work over as many waters as possible, and so we had some stunning results. It caught the Emperor twice in 24 hours. Now, that's a fish that comes out every 5-10 years, you know. So,
wow.
And so little Mikey went on the Manor, and he hasn't put that much time in. I guess he's been on there more than 5 weekends, but he's had both the top fish out of the Manor, you know, straight away, you know. And so I can give you loads of stories of lads. So yeah, so we're looking for proper anglers on proper waters, you know, to get us the captures, you know, to start lining it all up for when we launch it next year, you know. So we've got these mates, Jamie, who know how to catch them, and they're, you know, they're catching the right fish, the old scaly ones, and you get them to get in touch with me.
I mean, you played down the kind of size of Nash bait initially there. I mean, I remember Gary saying to me once a number of years ago that, you know, if a bait wasn't selling something like a ton a month, it wasn't worth even producing it. I mean, you've put some volume out over the years, but you just said you bought a machine that does like 8 times the volume you've ever done previously. I mean, that's pretty significant.
Yeah, that's just the main machine. We've then got another machine, smaller one, which we're going to use to, you know, use to make you know, specials, dedicated baits. You know, because one thing, you know, I've got, I could never go in the water and use the same bait as anyone else. And, you know, you've got this kind of thing now where, you know, bait companies just hammer a bait and everyone's on the same bait on the water. You know, as always, so if you fish the same as everyone else, you catch the same as anyone else. And I've always had an edge in my bait, and it's the only thing I would never tell an angler about. You know, I always say, you know, I'll tell you anything I'm doing, mate, is set the bait on the hook. And that's because I've invested a lot of time and money in that bait. You know, but so recognising all the lads who are going to be helping us get this bait to market and make it a big success, in a way, as has come up before, well, you know, this is going to ruin my fishing. Or, like, you know, hang on, now I've established this bait and done really well, and now you're going to blow it for me. So we're working on other versions that will give those people help us an edge. You know,
just a slight tweak,
in those situations. Just a slight tweak, yeah, so they can feel they've still got their own personal bait and identity, you know?
There's a couple of points there. I mean, your average guy that maybe isn't aware of all this stuff, you know, he chooses his... He goes into a shop, he looks what's in the freezer, he chooses, you know, the company and maybe the type of bait that he fancies on that particular day, that particular session or whatever. But probably one of the main reasons I've used Nash bait for 15 years or more now is the fact that even when the Scopex squid absolutely smashed everywhere, having the ability to be able to use a bait that's slightly tweaked. Now, the S-Mix was the bait, you know, it was the base mix, as you know, but, you know, I used a, instead of the Scopex flavouring in it, I would use a banana and sweet corn extract flavouring in exactly the same bait, but just having a slightly different version or a tweak is sometimes the edge. Now, Gary always used to say to me that the Scopex squid would outfish everything else, and then he'd change it slightly with a flavour, and then that'd outfish the Scopex squid for a couple of years. If you went back to the Scopex squid a year or two later, it would then outfish the previous version. And if you kept tweaking it infinitely, it would always outperform the previous version. And A, why do you think that is? But B, having the ability with a company to be able to do that. So do you think there'll ever be a time where a normal customer can go in and goes, right, I'm going to use 200 kilos of bait this season on my syndicate. I'm going to go to my shop. I'm going to order some Nash bait and I want it like this. I want it slightly tweaked. Will there ever be a time that an ordinary customer can go into the tackle shop and do that and order their own tweaked version of one of your baits?
I'm working on so much, James, you know, who knows, but as I say, all I will say is I know how I feel, and I want my tweak bait, and so I want others to be able to, you know, get the same, you know. But the whole crazy thing about this bait world is that most anglers don't get, you can use the same bait for 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, yeah. You touched on it yourself. You tweak it, and you know, a couple of years later, it works again. You know, they've got to have a new bait. They've got to have a new bait. But, you know, the squid. That's, you know, the squid on a good base mix and different attractions is all a carp angler would ever need. You know, and we've got quite a few anglers. You know, who, you know, we roll for. And they're still using Scopex squid to this day. You know, and I still go in waters and use it, and, you know, and I don't feel anyone's ever got an edge over me. You know, but the simple principle is, I try and think of my word in this, how can I say it? You've got a lovely piece of tasty fresh bread, right? And you spread Marmite on it. No, better than that is, you spread strawberry jam on it, okay? Yeah, you catch a load of fish, and then, you know, you've caught X number of the population, and, you know, it's starting to lose its effectiveness. You keep your lovely fresh bread, but you instead put raspberry jam on it, or blackcurrant jam.
Yeah,
that's the simplest way I can say it to you. You know, we always want to eat bread, but you might get fed up with strawberry jam and want to change to blackcurrant jam.
Yeah.
You know, that's the simplest way I can say it. You know, but you enjoy the bread, you know, the taste of it, the goodness, whatever. So you just change your topping.
Just, you know, and that's, change, yeah.
That is, yeah, that's the best way I can say it. And that's the reality of carp bait. You know, we know those key common ingredients and elements that they love and always will do. So it's just about tweaking just to throw them off guard if they're, you know, they're too wary of a specific element. But often Gary, you know, Gary's a genius. There's no one in touch with the industry. Gary won't take those elements out. It just really dampens them down so they're almost undetectable. And with the carp, it attracts them. They don't quite understand or remember why, but it attracts them. You know, using, you know, those key notes that they love, but they might have got wary of. You won't necessarily take them out. It just really reduces them. So we still get the attractiveness, but then we bring in a new top level note, you know, to really label the bait, if you like, you know.
Yeah. I know you had some comments about pre-baiting busy lakes when it came up in conversation on the previous carp cast. I just don't bother now on busy lakes. I think sometimes it's unfair. I mean, there's two reasons for pre-baiting for me. There's one to introduce a bait to the lake, you know, if I think I've got an edge with the bait and I want to just get that bait in all around the lake so the carp are finding it everywhere, and I'm not particularly pre-baiting a spot to fish to reserve, you know, an area. I'm just wanting to get the fish on the bait. That's different to me to actually taking a swim, or a peg as we call it up north, taking a swim and going, right, I'm going to bait a spot in here continually every week now for a little while.
Sorry, as a point of reference here, pre-baiting for you is baiting one spot.
No, I'm saying there's two types of pre-baiting. So there's
paying attention.
There's pre-baiting.
I'm watching the cart rolling outside the office. Go on, sorry.
So there's two types of pre-baiting. There's one to just get the fish finding your bait everywhere to give yourself a little edge with the bait that you're putting in. And there's two. There's pre-baiting an area to train the fish to go to that area. Now, okay. I never train the fish to go to an area on a busy lake. I'll do it on a lake that no one
fishes. Absolutely agree with that. Yeah. Absolutely agree with that, and that was, you know, that's my robust conversations with Gary Bayes over many years at the Manor. He would pick an area and just focus on it and bait and bait and bait, and as a result, quite a few anglers, including Dale Suggest, Zen and Boko and Rao, caught the amphibian, you know, off of his baited area, you know. And I just say to him, you're so flipping stupid, but, you know, Gary, he wants to do it his way, but, you know, I, like I said, I want to establish my bait. I want my bait to have the edge. And so whether it be a syndicate water of 50 acres with 5 anglers on it, or the busiest commercial, if I do pick that water, and the best example is Warnwell, actually, you know, when it had Herman, the biggest common in the country, you know, you won't get a more precious situation than that, but I wanted to establish my bait, and so I pre-baited that lake, and, you know, it was incredible. It was embarrassing at times and caused me issues. You know, I would go down there for a week and, you know, I'd be the only one that caught, you know, and caught consistently, whereas the others would just be looking at me, muttering to themselves, and the mates and glaring at me. But even the point I was trying to make was, even on the busiest situation, if you go about it in the right way, or the wrong way, putting the instruction on a pull, you can establish a bait.
Yeah, even on a busy lake.
For example, what I used to do, you know, again, God can judge me on this, but, you know, if you want to catch carp, you've got to be creative and pull strokes, you know. And with Warnwell, what I would do, I would get up 3 o'clock in the morning, when that was a time, you know, low ebb for anglers, and they'll be putting the zeds in, and I'll creep round and I'll just flick baits all along the margins between their swims.
Yeah.
You know, just so, you know, there's always carp, you know, looking and for the bait and all that, you know.
Yeah. What's your opinion on the morals? Obviously, lakes, I know Walmart was a busy lake, but, you know, carp fishing is probably more popular now than it was in the 80s. Lakes are busier, especially the, you know, the lakes
with the bigger fishing.
Yeah, so
it was mid-90s, Jane.
Yeah. Like, what's your opinion on the ethics of you know, like picking a swim and baiting it, letting the rest of the syndicate know that, you know, that's kind of your swim?
Well, you've got to turn that round. You know, I'm quite stunned and shocked at ethics nowadays. And again, I go back to Warnwell. You know, I was in a swim and I would have caught Herman, but this guy just kept harassing me for that swim. Apparently, there was a 48-hour rule in the swim. But apart from the fact I had nowhere to move to, because every swim was taken, you know, I would never ask an angler who's having it off or he's in a going peg to move. I just couldn't do it. You know, it's immoral as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. You know, and this guy calls me big grief. Big grief. You know, so in the end, he forced me to move on the third day a swim become available, because what I was concerned about was the impression I was giving the management. You know, I was down there to catch Herman and I didn't want to fall out of favour with the management, and so I reluctantly decided to move into this peg. Christ, I'm saying it again, peg. This is this conversation. It's a matchman's turn. You've got me on this swim. I reluctantly decided to move. The listener wouldn't know we had a robust debate before I come on there about, no, a carp, somewhere where you sit in carp fishing, a swim, Jamie, not a peg. That's what matchmen do with a box. But yeah, I'll go back to the story. So I reluctantly moved into this swim, which luckily was next door. So at least I felt I had a chance of getting on the area. And I'd seen Herman rolling over my boats. You know. Anyway, there was two lads over on the opposite side that were clearly proper carp anglers, you know, with ethics and all that, and you know, and they knew how to fish. And you know, they had the same view of this guy, who, by the way, then went on with his son to fish for England. Perhaps I shouldn't have said that, but that's what I was stunned to hear about later, by the way. But so I pulled them round. I said, get in my swim. You should have seen his face when he's come round and there's two other blokes in the swim. Yeah, we done ya. But I'll tell you the rest of the story. Anyway, that afternoon, one of the lads had Herman, you know, right. from the swim and the spot I was in, you know. So this guy cost me Herman. But there's a funny story here. His next ploy was, he set his hutchy two-man up behind these two lads. Like, right, lads, you know, and just set me baby up. In other words, you've got 48 hours and I'm definitely moving in. He said, oh, and if you want to use it, you know, you're welcome to use it. Anyway, they had Herman, and they decided to leave early. They said he can have his swim. And they said, by the way, Kev, we got him back. We pissed in his hutchie.
I thought you were going to say number two then.
No, he didn't go that far. I think it's about ethics of angling, say they've changed so much. So that, to answer you, because I waffled too much. If I was on a syndicate water where the anglers of a similar minds and you know, a guy wanted to pick a certain area and establish a bait, you know, I would say, you crack on, mate, and I won't go near it. I remember once, and there's always an emotive photo, years ago, there's a photo in an old magazine, it might be an old angling magazine, and it said, there was a sign stuck in the swim saying, pre-baiting, please respect. You know, that's how it was in the old days.
So you just put a sign in your peg and, wow. So
they put a sign on his peg, pre-baiting, please respect, you know, and I would still do that, you know, if it was the right syndicate and the right group of people. You know, it happened at Harefield in a way. You know, anglers were focusing on there. It's almost like it's a self-respect thing. You know, if an angler's having it off in a swim, you know, I kind of wouldn't want to feel like I was getting on the back of him. If that makes any sense to you, Jamie. I want to do my own thing and prove it to myself.
I feel exactly the same as far as merit goes, but I'd rather. I was in the situation on the Manchester Park Lake when I was fishing for Angry, which is a really tricky fish, comes out every couple of years. I was in a situation on there where I was arriving on a Monday morning. There was nobody on the lake, maybe one person on an 18-acre lake, but there were half a dozen pegs or more that I felt like I couldn't go in because people were coming down most evenings to bait them up. You know, it was well known who it was and what pegs they were. I was coming down thinking, and they weren't picking out the way areas, they were picking key swims. and this had gone on all season. I was arriving at the lake, and it was like, where do I fish? This fish, if I go in that peg and I catch one of the fish I'm after, the merit of the catch is gone. I'm not going to feel right. Other people are going to call me for doing it. And I was in a position like, right, well, I want to catch fish on my own terms, but I'm basically not fishing for fish now. You know, there's fish showing over that spot there. I know so-and-so's baiting that one. And I was in a situation where I wish I didn't know what you were doing and where you were doing it. So I can just be a carp angler. I can just go and fish where I think I should be fishing on this session. And the trouble is, one or two people do it, especially if it works. Somebody has a hit that autumn over heavy bait and everyone left him alone. The following year, somebody else wants to do it, and somebody else, and somebody else.
Yeah, but Jamie, I don't think that falls into what I'm talking about. Yeah, I'm talking about a guy's decided to take on an area where, in essence, he's neglected and no one fishes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what so you crack on, mate. If you think you've got a punt on that, and everyone else has, ignored it for whatever reason, you crack on. That's what I'm talking about. You can't do that on going swims. You absolutely can't. And some of that went on at Harefield, and I never agree. It's just like anglers queuing up to take a swim off their mates. If that started happening on Royston, I would crack down on that, because it's a different situation. But say, so I still believe on some waters, maybe a big Cambridgeshire pit, if you've got the right sort of syndicate, you can apply. You can apply etiquette, and everyone's got a clear understanding, all what I called old school, and they respect each other, and they've all got the same mindset that you can, understanding the rules, tie up an area, yourself, but certainly not on Manchester Park. Like, by the way, I've got a chuckle, I'm going to do you here. We're running a sweepstake to see if you wouldn't mention Mr. Angry this episode.
Oh, no. Who's
we reckon it was mentioned every episode, so we run a sweepstake. I think I've lost.
Okay.
I'm a bugger, isn't I?
fair enough. Touché, you got me. It's normally the fat lady that gets mentioned, so somebody's got
that as well. Well, we're waiting till Mark to come on, and then there'll be a sweepstake on the fat lady for sure. Well, I shouldn't have said that now. He won't mention it, will it?
Yeah, okay, you got me.
That's throwing you, isn't it?
No, because I could... there are certain lakes and fish, and then I could have had the same sweepstake about Warmwell in my chats with you. It's there are certain things that leave an impression because they were significant.
You're so right.
In your growth as an angler.
Yeah.
And
you're absolutely right.
It's a lake where so many things happened, and there's so many good examples that came from the fish or the lake or the type of place,
It's a really good point that, I'm actually writing my second book, and, a lot of it is about Warmwell, and that's purely, the first book and the second book is about trying to pass on my knowledge in terms of going through your apprenticeship and your learning curve, and Warmwell taught me more about carp than any other lake I ever went on. So, touche. I regularly mention Warmwell. Regularly mention it.
I reckon there's 100% record. It's probably the same as me.
I'm going to go back and check now.
Probably the same as me.
Don't bother on a sweepstake next time then.
It's like you say, it's a significant thing though. There were so many things that came from that lake. And with it being a park lake, the fact that people were stitching up areas basically, and it was frustrating. I actually stopped fishing that year because I thought I'm never going to catch it on my terms. And as I said to you, when we haven't mentioned it on this show, but when I first spoke to you about my European trip, the first thing you did was take the mickey out of me for blanking for a few weeks because I could have caught a fish. But I said to you at the time, I know that I could have caught a fish by fishing in one of my pals' pegs because I didn't fish for the first few days, and I don't want to catch a fish just to hold a picture up. I want to catch a fish because I've hunted it, achieved something, and I don't need to just go and catch a 20 pound common.
Put your bits of the jigsaw in place, which is a whole new dimension, going to Europe and trying to learn each water, and the different aspects which often can be very different from this country, you know, completely different animals are touched, you know, their appetites, but, you know, there's another element there, which, as I've mentioned it, I've completely forgotten, Jamie.
So I want to catch a fish on my own terms, you know, I want to catch it because I've earned that fish, I've found something out, I've found my own spot, or, you know, I've caught a fish out of deeper water, and just to catch a fish off my mate's spot so that I didn't blank on holiday, I mean, that's I still enjoyed my holiday, whether I caught or not, and I know that I could have caught a fish if I wanted to.
What I was going to say was, you know, everyone sees all the big fish caught in France or whatever, and so they all jump on in a car or a coach and go over there. And certainly to a large degree, they don't understand that, you know, it's no different in England. You know, you've got to fish for them. In fact, I always made the analogy that, you know, where would you expect to turn up for the first time at a lake for a week, you know, and expect to catch 40, 50, 60 pounds or whatever. You know, but they've got this kind of expectation. You know, I can, you know, I've told you the great times earlier, but I can simply tell you dozens of, you know, stories of how we've gone abroad and had absolutely disastrous trips, you know. Yeah, it's carp fishing, So if, as you say, and I've always said it, when I'm abroad, I'm on holiday. You know, I've always made the distinct difference between the English carp fishing, which I love because of the pressure there, and fishing abroad. You know, and you see them, they go abroad, they catch a 40, they never fish in England again because they can't make that distinction and then try and, you know, get their act together and sharpen their skills in England. But I've always said, treat it like a holiday. You know, the people you meet, the scenery, the adventure, and then, you know, if it doesn't come together, you still have a good time, you know, and not demoralised, because it's not about just catching fish, you know, it's about a lot more when you go over there.
I know you had a couple of comments about what Chilli mentioned about, we spoke a lot about bait this episode, but you know, Chilli had an opinion about kind of to catch the big fish in a lake, wading through all the smaller fish. I know you probably think the same as me on this, or I think the same as you, that I don't believe that's the case. I believe big fish act differently. You can select them with certain baits and by fishing slightly differently to you know, just trying to catch the majority of the carp.
You nailed it. Yeah, one of my proudest claims is I've caught 7 UK 40s in basically less than 2 hours of being out of water. I'm repeating this on your show, but I've always said I'm not a carp angler, I'm a specimen hunter, you know, and that's never true with carp. And I'm going to mention the dready word again at Warmwell. You know, that, I just told that story of when, you know, I had to give the swim up, but I think it's 3-4 times I moved out of swims and Herman was caught from that swim within 12-24 hours. And I thought I was the unluckiest sod on the planet. But finally, the penny dropped. It was how I was fishing. You know, and that's why I never caught Herman. Yeah. You know, and it's a completely different approach. And most of my approach is around tiny traps and quite often reducing the element of attraction, like everyone wants to glug baits and whatever. Yeah, I rarely do that. I'm reducing the attraction, you know, because how I say it, you know, the hooligans come roaring in your swim, they've been attracted to your bait, they scoff it, and then they move on. The big old fat girl, you know, just needs to look at her body and she puts on weight, you know, she slowly, ponderously moves into the swim after they've gone and she picks off the crumbs. So if you make a bait too attractive, you attract the fish you don't want, you know, rather than sitting there waiting till the big old girl comes along who's slower and is really, you know, in detail moving across the bottom and picking up every little morsel that those younger guns, you know, miss. You know, it's just one example. You know, it's in every way, it's a different approach from just catching carp, and for sure you can be selective and catch the big ones very quickly. You know, let's go back to the manor. You know, yep. Gary's on there 5 years. You know, Gary's an awesome carp angler, but at the time, his thought process on how to get the Annie was just to concentrate in there and fit it in. And I think it was 5 years before he caught her. You know, I hooked the big one on my fifth night, and then I went back a week later and I hooked the Annie on the morning of my sixth night. You know, so I hooked both the big fish in there in my first six sessions.
Yeah, I tend to do that, and I don't even know if it's deliberate sometimes. I think it must be just something to do with the way I fish. Maybe I'm just not effective yeah. enough to catch all the fish, but virtually every lake I've fished, that's happened. I'll catch less than everyone else, but I'll catch the big ones. You know, that Elstow 17, 18 carp in Elstow 2. Yeah. I had both the 40s. I landed five fish, I think, including both the 40s. I had mates of mine that caught 20 fish out of that lake out of 18 carp before they caught a big one.
Yeah, I used to love fishing with Alan Blair because he wanted to catch numbers.
Yeah,
yeah, so he's my pest controller. Yeah, he's my pest controller. I remember we had a conversation one night saying, what? You'd rather catch 20 carp in the doubles than 140? He said, yeah. Yeah, and that's how he was, you know, when I was getting into carp fishing. You know, so it was great. You know, we really, you know, fished well together. He'd catch 100 carp. I'd just catch, you know, the five I wanted, you know. In fact, I remember we went to one water. I caught the big fish in, you know, in 2 hours of being there, you know, but he was equally as happy as Larry with the eight doubles he caught that night, you know. But then the bug, I've got the big fish bug, you know, and so now it's just, you know, straight on competition, and, you know, he's, they don't call him Red Bull Adam for nothing, you know, he's roaring around the lake with five times more energy than I can have now, and a lot more fitter, you know, so it's getting a bit nasty now, you know, so I think I'm going to have to start, I don't know, trying to find some way of handicapping him, cut his legs off, something like that.
He's a human being like I've never seen in my life. I've never seen anybody with his worth ethic, with his the work ethic when he's fishing. The guy just doesn't seem to need sleep, and I, that's not exaggerating. You know, anybody listening to this go, oh, I know somebody like that. You probably don't. Alan actually lives on 3 hours sleep a day.
Yeah.
You know, permanently.
They probably don't. Yeah, he lives on 3 hours sleep a day, but you know, but his work ethic, whether it be, you know, how hard he fishes or works, would be four times the rate of a normal person in between.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. When I saw him after Eurobanks, you know, he walked in. I said, Alan, you just look so gaunt and thin. Yeah. And basically, all he did was just pig out for the next week and sleep. And actually, he said to me last week, right, you know, I'm revitalised now. And I say he's filled out. He looked fit again, you know. And, you know, so he just drove himself into the ground by the sounds of it on that last year of banks, you know.
Yeah.
I think Ollie was getting worried about it, you know. Heard a bit of feedback. Ollie was getting worried, saying, Alan, you know, you need to slow down. You're going to kill yourself. But just so on the mission, you know, I've got to make this great year of banks and, you know, make it a product that everyone's going to go, wow, you know.
He's definitely
a one-off. I love him to bits. I've never made up my mind whether he's my third son or my brother. I've never made up my mind. You know?
Yeah, I'll leave that one to you. Let's wrap this up with something that I've used for 25 years, probably. I've used a Coleman stove, and I know you heard us mention the fact that they're just no good these days, and you used to use a Coleman, didn't you?
I still do, I always have done. I will say the Black Tank one in the 80s was by far, in my opinion, the best, and that's because of the power of the flame, you know. You know, I used to call it Tyson, and it was really unpredictable. I think it took me eyebrows and my hair off three or four times, but that could cook a stove in seconds. And it was actually a mate that persuaded me to sell it, because I've got to get his new one, these multi-fuels. But the multi-fuels just do not have the same speed of boiling as that original Black Tank one did. But they're still far better than gas, you know. A couple of winters ago, I was fishing with Annie near the latest gas stove. You know, I lost the will to live in the end, you know, waiting for a cup of tea. So, you know, I said, look, I'm bringing me Coleman in future, you know. But, you know, one tip on how you can really, you know, ensure their longevity is to use Red X. Just use a cap of Red X, every time you fit it, but maybe, you know, every three, four tanks of petrol, use a cap of Red X, you know, engine conditioner, and it really does keep them in brilliant condition. And, you know, another thing, a couple of lads at work have got them, and they've wrecked them in minutes because the plungers you know, they've ripped the neoprene washer in the plunger.
Yeah.
Well, whenever I buy a Coleman, I straight away put a leather one in it. Tackle Box sell them, and those leather washers will last you a lifetime. All you have to do is occasionally squirt a little bit of 3-in-1 oil down the plunger so you keep them moist.
Yeah.
If you don't go fishing for 3-4 months and get your stove out, your washer would have dried out, and there'd be no, you know, no seal, if you like, between the washer and the chamber. So, you know, if you don't use them for a while, just drip a bit of 3-in-1 oil down there. My last Coleman, the one I'm on now, probably had it 15 years, Jamie, with no problem.
Yeah.
Just by doing those two things, you know? Just by doing those two things.
Basically, something happened to the Colemans. I'm assuming they found a way of making them cheaper, you know, producing them cheaper. For some reason...
The reality of that probably is, as you mentioned it, thinking about it, and say the best one was a black stove one, end of the 80s. Then the 90s was, you know, moving production to China. I bet that what's happened, you know, Coleman moves their stove production to China, because they're for sure aren't as good. The same thing's happened with Zippo lighters.
Yeah.
You know, in the 80s, you bought a Zippo, you fill it up with petrol, and it lasts you a week. You know, and you know, now, you know, they just seem to lose, you know, they seem to fume out or whatever, you know, and they just... The petrol's gone in seconds, and that's clearly because they used to be made in America, and now they're made in China, and they're rubbish.
Yeah, yeah, the Coleman's definitely changed. I mean, I had one of the early ones. I don't know if I had a black one, but the ones that used to come in the plastic square grey, like, box.
No. That's one of the first... No, that's one of the first multi-fuels, I think. I'm going
that's
back
right,
before
yeah.
that, these black ones, yeah. They used to have a... They used to have little fold-out feet on them, and I think they were smaller in diameter, but maybe a bit higher.
Yeah.
You know, so they're awesome. If anyone's got a black Coleman out there, I'll give them 50 quid for it at least.
Yeah, but I probably would too, because those dual fuels, the Sportsters and all the ones they brought out recently in the last
rubbish.
Sort of 10 years,
yeah.
There's something about the generators, they clog up instantly, and I do use Red X. I know I also...
do you? Oh, right.
Yeah, I'm a long time, probably not as frequently
right.
as you. I probably used to put it in once a month, or sometimes just when they got a problem. But I used to be able to...
No, you don't do it when they got a problem, Jamie. No, really, okay, you know,
the
maybe they've got worse, but yeah, but you want to make sure they don't get a problem. You know, it won't solve the problem if you've got the problem. You know, just...
Yeah.
So it's just keeping it in good condition all the time, you know.
Yeah, you know, I know how to dismantle a Coleman. I've got full seasons out of them after they've been knackered at the start of the season, and you take the wire out the inside of the generators, and I used to take like a scouring pad to clean the carbon deposits off the wire and thread them back through, and they're just cheap crap now. I mean, well, they're not even that cheap. They're like 20 quid for the generators now. And
yeah, see, that's the other, yeah. So you're not using that Red X enough. If you use the Red X enough, you won't get those carbon deposits. The top of mine looks like chrome.
That's where I'm going.
So I've had mine 15 years. Oh, yeah, I've had mine about 15 years, and it's still going strong. And
yeah.
I still won't use anything other than the petrol stove, because, like I say, in winter, it just cooks up so quick, and I'm sure petrol is an attractor. If I spit it on my hands, I don't bother about washing it off. You know, it ain't done my carp catches any harm.
Well, we had a question in...
People are paranoid about it.
We had a question into the Carpcast this week, actually asking that exact point. You know, basically saying he wants to use petrol, he's worried about the fumes and stuff in his fingers. Now, I've used a Coleman my entire serious fishing career, you know, at least 15 years plus. It's never stopped me catching fish. I've used them exclusively up until this last 12 months, where I haven't had a decent Coleman, but I miss it. They're cheaper to use. They boil kettle in seconds. I use them as bivy warmers in the winter. It's never stopped me catching fish, and you don't
never
think
stopped
petrol,
me catching.
You know,
I will say to people who think you are worried about, yeah, whatever you may have on their hands, whether it's petrol or cigarettes or whatever. Yeah. It's simple. If I ever had a concern, I just go down to the margin of the lake and wash my hands in the clay and mud.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, if you're touching the bait, it's going to smell just like that. You know, I've done that all my life, you know, and so it's simple to me. Make your hands smell like the lake.
Yeah, I do that. Every time I'm baiting up or messing about with rigs, I'll just wash my hands in the water. But that's about as much as I worry about, you know, contaminating.
Yeah, I'm not saying wash your hands in the water. I'm saying I will stick my hands into the clay or mud and, like, you know,
mud,
really rub it all in and then wash it off. But just, you know, as I'm saying that, there's one proviso, you know, if you see rats in the margins, don't do it.
Yeah, good shout. Especially
with Wells disease.
Especially if you've got cuts on your hand.
Cuts. Don't take the risk. If you, you know, if you know there's rats on your leg or so, you just don't want to risk Wells disease. That's a bad one to get, and it can be lethal.
I'd like to thank you.
I've had that situation. Well, I just say I've had that situation. My way around that was to get some mud out of the lake and just pour water in from my water bottle. You know, or mud from the vert bank, you know, and just pour water in there in my water bottle and just do that. You know, but someone could say, well, the rat could have peed on that, I suppose. But yeah, I know I've waffled too much, pal. Lovely talking to you.
Fantastic. Until next time, Kev. Thank you very much.
Look forward to it, Jamie. Cheers, mate. Bye.
So big thank you to Kevin. As I said, we will be getting someone from Fox and Corder on. I've not managed to get hold of Danny while I've been away for the last 3 or 4 weeks, but I do have his number, and he has said he will come on and keep us up to date with Corder stuff. I like to keep things balanced, because I know Kevin's been on probably 3 out of the last 6 shows, but that's because I think we only had 2 shows in July. Just the way things have worked out. But it's always great to listen to Kevin, to listen to his views on life and stuff. Somebody I respect very much, and we are balancing it out, as I said. But who's the main man at JRC? Is there an actual boss, or is it just a company? Is there a figurehead?
There is. There's a fella called Stuart Hale. I think his title is brand manager or something or other manager. He's high up anyway. So he was out on the video shoots with us, and I've spoke to him about just coming on for a quick chat, you know, later on in the year when you know, new things are about to be launched and these videos to come out, just to give us a quick update of what are happening. And I'd like to go on. He's a good lad, and he's not only is he in that job, he's been in the tackle trade. I remember him serving me in Chapman's years ago, and he's also been around. He's caught some cracking fish from the likes of Elstow, Bundy's, and his local Lincolnshire waters.
Yeah, it's good to hear. You know, I'm interested in what goes on behind the scenes in business, and it's nice to know what other people are doing. So before we wrap this up, it's been a long one again, as the last few seem to have been. What's in this week's Carp Talk?
In this week's Carp Talk, they highlight how you can prevent the spread of KHV and it won't cost you a penny. And without seeing that, I'm going to assume it's something to do with drying your nets out.
Yes.
Something we should all do anyway. In the news, Gardner's Lewis Reed, he captures shoulders again. That's the weekly welly whacker. He also has 3 other weekly welly whackers. I just want to fish that lake now. Catch me on weekly welly whacker.
If you want to read all this stuff from yourself, you can get the digital version of Carp Talk downloaded direct to any device, your Apple device, Android or PC, at www.pocketmags.com. It's a bit cheaper too. It's only £1.49 for that. Printed version, as you know, comes out every single Tuesday. It's an institution, has been for nearly 20 years probably. It's only £1.99. The stock is located on the Carp Talk website, which will tell you where you can buy a copy, or just go into your local news agent and ask them to get it for you, and I'm sure they will. I've been getting messages, in fact I was even tagged in a picture today of a chap with 3 different competition entries, and he tagged me in it saying that he hadn't sent a letter in years, and he had they were all stamped up and ready to send off. We encourage people to enter the Carp Talk competition because we want our Carp Cast listeners winning every week. And what can you win this week?
In this week, it's £270 worth of Nutribakes products to give away, along with a chance you can win one of the latest P1 Worldwide Pods from Solar, worth £470 for a pod.
I'd like to get Martin Locke on, actually, from Solar. They've been making pods for many years. He made the. Yeah. He does a lot of foreign angling, doesn't he? He made all the original kind of big pods, didn't he?
The Worldwide Pod, remember the Sod Pod?
the sort
that was of, the one yeah, to have.
I had one of them. Yeah. So if anyone's got Lockie's number and or is good friends with him, tell him we'd like to talk to him if he's interested. What else is in there?
Well, there's some good features in there. You've got John Llewellyn. He goes back in time to find burying the hook in the bait. He's if you don't know who John Llewellyn is, he's, you know, he's been around for a long time. There's a lot on the continent, and he is involved with the LA Carve. You've got Adam Clough checks out as a new warder in Dorset. Ben Stock has a result on Raysbury. See, it does do results. And Ted Bryan looks at ways to avoid catching bream. That is the article I've been waiting for. I'm going to buy 10 copies.
So you can read all this stuff for yourself. www.pocketmags.com is a digital version, or $1.99 in your local shop on a Tuesday. And that's it from us, Mark, this week. We will see you next week after the social.
Yep, see you then. Oh, before we go, keep an eye on our Facebook page, because when we're on the social, we'll be doing these Facebook live things, and hopefully there'll be a ton of fish caught for us to broadcast.
Check it out, and we'll see you soon.
See you then.
www.thecapcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise, and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.